Hello, you, and welcome to You Are Good, a feelings podcast about movies. Today, we're talking about Frozen with Vanessa Zoltan. I am one of your hosts, Alex Steed, and I will soon be joined by my marvelous co-host, Sarah Marshall. You Are Good, if you're not familiar, is a feelings podcast about movies, which means we talk about movies and what they speak to and what it's like to be alive in this world and a person who has to relate to other people. What feelings do the movies evoke and what does that speak to or resonate with in our experience? That's what we do here. It's fun. We're not movie critics. We are sometimes critical, but we're really here to say, what does this speak to in our experience and maybe the human experience in a bigger way? Frozen is a 2013 American animated musical fantasy film produced by Walt Disney Animation Studios. Of course, it is inspired by Hans Christian Andersen's 1844 fairy tale, The Snow Queen. It was directed by Chris Buck and Jennifer Lee. It stars the voices of Kristen Bell, Gossip Girl herself, Idina Menzel, Jonathan Groff, Josh Gad, and others. It's fun. You know about Frozen. You know all about it. If you have kids who are under, I don't know, probably 15, you have experienced Frozen a whole lot in your life, I imagine. And our guest, Vanessa Zoltan, is a chaplain, a podcaster, and a writer. She is the CEO and founder of Sorry Not Sorry Productions. She is a podcast host. She also runs pilgrimages and walking tours that explore sacred reading and writing. How are you doing? What's going on in your world? How are you feeling? What are you thinking about? What are you reading? What are you watching? Let us know at You Are Good or You Are Good Pod, depending on which of the social media networks we're engaging on. It's one of those two. Would love to hear about how you're doing. And don't forget that you, my friend, are good. I just saw, I'm in LA, but I'm never in one place long enough to do anything fun, I feel like. And I've been meaning to see at the Elysian Theater, Chad Damani and Rory Scovel have been having some shows there, and they're sort of interesting or freeform or improv, like things happen on stage. Been meaning to check it out for a while. I saw them perform last night with Ricky Lindholm, and I had a blast. I can't say anything else about it outside of the fact that it was like, it was just nice to be around people enjoying creative people being creative at us. I had a blast. But let us know what you've seen that has moved you. You Are Good, a feelings podcast about movies, is made possible with and by your support. Thanks to everyone who supports us on Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions. In exchange for that support, you get bonus episodes. There are some longer form bonus episodes that don't hit our feed. They're about movies themselves. There are some that are director's cut or longer cut episodes of the ones that do end up on our main feed. We have a bonus episode with our friend River Butcher coming up about the movie Mannequin. So if you're looking to hear us all talk about Mannequin, which is actually kind of a delightful movie, that's the sort of thing you'll find over on Bonus Land. So thank you for supporting the show and making it possible by supporting us in that way. If you, like me, are a supporter of Ceasefire, please find organizations in and around you that are engaging in actions to call for such a thing, to make noise about such a thing. And if you are in a position where you're able to share some resources financially, please check out the Palestine Children's Relief Fund, which we will have linked in the show notes. All right, that's it for this introduction to this conversation about Frozen. Let's, I don't know, I was looking for a Frozen pun. What could it be? No, I don't have one. I almost said let's get dangerous, like I was Darkwing Duck. Let's just stick with that. Let's get dangerous with Frozen. It has nothing to do with it, but if you are a Darkwing Duck fan, that might tickle something in you. Honestly, I can't believe that that theme song encouraged children to get dangerous. When there's trouble, you can call DW. Anyway, let's go talk about Frozen. Hello, Sarah Marshall.
Hello, Alex Steed. Wait. Oh, I was going to quote a song and now I can't remember it.
You've been busy concealing and not feeling. I understand.
Oh, God damn it.
I've seen this movie at least many times. And this is the first time I realized, as happens in every musical, that the Icemen who sing at the beginning are tipping us off to everything that's going to happen.
Mm. You know, that honestly didn't occur to me.
They talk about like not letting your heart freeze and letting it go. They say sort of all of these bits that...
It's the overture.
Yes, it's the overture. It makes more sense, I guess, if you've been watching this movie on and off for 11 years. Sarah Marshall, what do we have in store today? And who do we get to go to the store with?
Oh, wow. We are talking about Frozen, and we're talking about it with my friend Vanessa. Vanessa, hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for letting me talk about this movie.
Who are you? What's your deal?
My deal? My whole shtick is that I treat secular texts as if they were sacred. So I've three podcasts in which I do that. One is called Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, where we love Harry Potter and obviously hate J.K. Rowling. And then we have one called Hot and Bothered, where we are transitioning from treating Pride and Prejudice as sacred to treating rom-coms as sacred. So you guys are going to have to come on and talk to us about those.
Love that.
And then another one is where I just, I'm trained as an atheist chaplain. So I do chaplaincy on one of them, trying to encourage people to quit things. But then I have to share this because we're trying to get Sarah to do one. We run literary pilgrimages. That is how much we love our books, is that we go to the places. And have we thought about going to Denmark and doing a Frozen pilgrimage? Yes, we have.
Ooh.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I would love to do one of these. And my trouble is thinking of like where to go and what to do, because I just, it's like the thing where someone asks you what your favorite books are and you're like, I don't know.
I don't think I've ever read a book, now that you ask that question.
If you ever need someone to lead a literary pilgrimage to Maine for Stephen King stuff.
Oh, shit.
Talk to Sarah Marshall.
Oh, well, or you.
Sarah and Alex, let's do it.
Like, where would you take, what scary businesses would you take them to? You'd be like, this is a town convenience video store.
Every third business in Maine is the shop from Needful Things. Every third business in Maine is selling old haunted junk.
They call themselves antique stores, but we know.
They sure do.
They're just graveyards.
They are just graveyards. Vanessa, what is your relationship with Frozen, and why is this something that you're eager to talk about in this context?
So I have two stepdaughters, and we love this movie. To be clear, I've only known my stepdaughters for 8 years. They are 16 and 11. I will say their names are Ellen and Amy. So they're almost Elsa and Anna.
Yeah.
Amy, the 11-year-old, has beautiful red hair. There's like a lot of over-identifying with this film. But we love it so much that once, my husband is German and we were in Germany visiting his family, and he was out and the girls and I opted out of not understanding what was happening in German. And Frozen was the only movie I had downloaded to watch. And we watched it, and then we looked at each other and we said, should we watch this again? And we just hit play and watched it again. And I didn't hate it even the second time through. Like, there aren't a lot of things. I can't do that with roller coasters, right? Like, do it once and then be like, let's do it again right now. Mm-hmm. So it's just a special movie for me and my kiddos.
I got to do that with Space Mountain once. It was amazing.
Sarah, what's your relationship with Frozen? Is this a text in your life?
I didn't see Frozen until really late. As you know, I like to avoid crazes. I don't trust them. And how old do I sound?
I mean, as a scholar of panics, that also makes sense.
Yeah.
And also there's like, I think there's some kind of neurodivergent element to it where it's like, if people are all screaming about something in a confined space rhetorically, I'm like, no.
Sure.
I'm going to go think about the Marx Brothers. And so I remember when this movie came out, I was in my first year of grad school. It was something that clearly from a distance, which was from where I watched it, was an absolute cultural phenomenon and just stayed in the zeitgeist for months and months and months, and arguably forever, right? Because anyone who has had children in the past 11 years has watched this movie at least 50 times.
Yeah, definitely.
And something we talk about a lot on the show is how fractured our culture has become. And this is a movie that transcends that in a way that not even most Disney movies do today. And so I saw this finally, I think in 2019, and it was like old enough for me to feel comfortable like reacting to it, you know, fairly normally, as if it was just a movie. And I really fucking loved it. And I still love it. And I know that, like, there was some degree, as there is with any movie of this size, like with Titanic, for example, of like overexposure to Frozen and people getting justifiably very sick of it, especially the ones with kids. But also it is like so rewatchable. And as I was watching it today, I was like, this is one of the only movies of the past millennium so far that actually has something for everyone and does it in a way that doesn't make it feel like factory farmed and like kind of like a GMO movie. Like, it feels organic and it feels like it has a real human sense of humor, but it's like, you know, an action adventure rom-com interlaced with like a gay feelings movie and a funny little snowman and a bunch of other stuff. And you're like, it's shocking that it works as well as it does, in my opinion.
It is an action adventure rom-com in a way that I didn't appreciate again until this time.
It's like Speed.
It really is.
They're being chased by wolves.
Oh my God. Well, let's, I'm stoked to dive into this in a bigger way, but you know, in order to do that, we should be set up with some plot. So Sarah Marshall, what is Frozen about?
Oh my God. What is Frozen about, you guys? Am I right? So if you've seen this many times and I am incorrect on nuances, I apologize, but I bet if you have kids, then you've only been able to watch the first half hour over and over. So this is helpful to you. So we open with like some beautiful snowflakes. We have our overture song of the ice block cutters. We open with like the historical ice industry. Hello, it's perfect. And we see baby Kristoff, who's going to be a character later, with his baby reindeer cutting a tiny block of ice and putting it on his tiny sled. And I remember years before I watched this, hearing the songwriters interviewed, something they talked about was like, we knew we had to start out with a song for boys so that boys would know why they were there. And I was like, check. You know, if you know what you have to do, you might as well do it well. It's the song for boys. And so then we go to the adventures of Anna and Elsa. They're the little princesses of Arendelle. Elsa has ice powers for some reason. We never find out why, right? She just does.
One of our rock trolls does ask, was she born with this or cursed with this? And they say born with it, but we still don't know what's going on genetically. Like, we don't know where it's coming
from. We do in Frozen 2, guys.
Oh, good. Ooh. We get that unasked for backstory.
We are treating Frozen 2 as non-canonical because we haven't bothered to see it yet. But what happens in that one?
It's actually so good. It turns out that Elsa is the fifth element.
And then Bruce Willis shows up. What?
Multipass.
And she's just so magical that she can create peace between the indigenous people of Arendelle and the white settlers of Arendelle.
That's a impressive fucking element, because none of the other ones can do that.
I know.
I have to check it out. Sounds like there might be some white savior questions, but
yes. But then they try to deal with it and then they fail at dealing, they're being Disney, but the songs are amazing and they miss their mom, and any song between like a daughter and a mom who's dead, I'm just gonna sob.
I like to think that there was a Disney writer's room some night, 2 a.m, no hummus left, when, you know, someone suddenly is struck by a bolt of inspiration. They've been stuck, right? They're like, how the fuck are we going to make Frozen 2? What's the plot of this goddamn thing going to be? And then Ashley is like, Elsa is the fifth element. And then that's what they do.
There's no more hummus, but there is still weed.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So before Elsa was the fifth element, she was just a little girl with ice powers that nobody knew what was going on. It's really a case for Dr. House, but she loves to play with her sister Anna, who has the red hair, and the beautiful opening sequence, Do You Want to Build a Snowman?, is them building a little snowman, Olaf, and having fun. And then, of course, as happens when kids play with ice powers, and also lawn darts for that matter, Elsa accidentally shoots some ice into her sister's brain or something. And so her parents are like, well, We got to take her to the rock trolls. I don't know why I'm sure they cover it in Frozen 2, why the parents have a relationship with the trolls.
I'm just going to pretend that Frozen 2 covers every hole you find in this movie.
Yeah, let's do that. So, all right. So, yeah. So they take baby Anna to the trolls who are like, we must erase her memories in order to save her brain from the ice. And it's like, wait, really?
But keep the fun.
That's my favorite part. They're like, erase her memories, but keep the fun. Or erasing the magic specifically. They're alter her memories, like, you know, X-Files aliens are supposed to do. And so that works. And then the parents go on a quick biz trip. I don't know why they think they're going to be away for 2 weeks if they're traveling by ship, but maybe they're like bopping over to the next fjord.
Gets explained in Frozen 2. That really does, though.
I know. I love it. It's very enticing to think about all that I'm going to learn.
So happy for you.
And so, but because, you know, this is a coming of age story, they're not long for this world. And so they die in a series of discrete cutaways.
To beautiful music.
Yeah.
It's a gorgeous scene.
Yeah.
If you're going to kill parents, this is how to do it.
This is how I would want to be killed in a movie.
For sure.
This is how I would want my death in a movie to be scored. Let me at least say that.
I want to be killed in a movie like Neil Patrick Harris in Gone Girl.
Like a giallo film.
You don't remember how he dies in that movie?
He dies like while in mid thrust, basically.
Okay, got it.
Throat slash.
So much blood.
Yeah. Was there a wine bottle?
Yep.
It's coming back to me.
Yeah. So parents die. Elsa has learned after the ice incident to conceal, not feel, and wear gloves. And because she's so terrified of hurting her sister again, she just kind of shuts herself up in her room, which we again learn in a song. This is also a musical that really works. And I think, you know, when we talk about how hard it is to kind of figure out the vocabulary of the movie musical, because it's hard to translate theater specifically to film, it feels like Disney really found a loophole. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so Elsa's getting coronated, which is a bit of a stressor for her because her entire, you know, all of her equilibrium is based on being shut up in her room. So this is going to be tough, especially with the amount of handshaking involved in the job. Meanwhile, Anna is super excited because they haven't had people over in forever and there's going to be a party
where she can find true love.
And what should she meet but a guy who's like, I'm true love. And she's like, oh my God, the very thing I've been looking for at my first party.
It's really a perfect situation where, like, your family has forgotten you. You've been shut out in your house from sort of like all of civilization. You've been given no opportunity to develop any real sense of self. And you meet a con man who can see you wearing your heart on your sleeve.
Mm-hmm. I just think that Anna is really making a reasonable decision in getting engaged to this stranger.
Well, she's doing anything she can.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be worse than her home life, it would certainly seem.
It cannot be worse than her home life.
But you know what? It can.
Yeah.
As we've all learned, it sure can.
Yeah. The answer here is that there needs to be a better route out of bad, not that this applies to Anna really, but like a better route out of bad situations than just finding a guy to trust.
To be a passport.
And there isn't one in America at the moment.
Or many places. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where is there one? I'm tired of like comparing ourselves to these imaginary European countries most of us have never even seen, you know, where the babies are recycling all day long.
There must be a country where it is not a popular political sport to year after year figure out new ways to, and in some evil fashion, further gut an already non-existent social safety net. Like there has to be somewhere. I don't know. That has to exist somewhere. Let us know in the comments.
Well, people are always saying it's Scandinavia, which is what Arendelle seems to be basically a pastiche of.
Right. But then it has all of its racial baggage.
Anti-immigration stuff. That stuff.
You know, just the just minor inconveniences to, you know, the fantasy of an ideal country.
It's good. It's Midsommar issues.
Right. And I feel like Americans specifically spent so much of the 90s being like, you know, in Scandinavia, that it's like, it's almost setting up this worldview where it's like, well, we're just kind of stuck the way we are. We're loud and stupid, so we can't, we'll never be perfect. And it's like, well, no one's perfect. They're racist idiots also, so we have no excuse.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's I think, you know, the thing that we have to do that we're not particularly good at doing because everything is set up on a mythology and a brand is, rather than going like, what do we not want to be like, actually asking like what we do want to be like. And that's a thing that, I don't know, for whatever reason, has been not in the popular conversation. And anytime someone asks that question, they get shot eventually.
I mean, we want to be like what we think we once were.
Yes.
But never were. Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to be like the myth said we were.
Right.
Well, and whatever we once were that was good that we aren't anymore was, you know, pretty much based on there being a stronger social safety net, which was why people could create a better life than the one they had been born into in the past.
Right.
Because how we ended up with Ronald Reagan being able to get ahead because of the New Deal, which benefited his family when he was growing up, and then turning into a Republican.
Because he did it alone, Sarah.
Yeah, apparently.
Yep.
Yeah, the story changes with time. And then, you know, you got a lot of money and then you don't want the tax man to take it. And then there are communists infiltrating Hollywood and you have to name names to the FBI.
And not only that, but like hippies smell bad. So you have to shoot at them if you're governor of California. It's hard to be Reagan.
All these people fucking in the park.
Yeah, what the hell?
Take them out.
Tear gas.
What a time.
Yeah. Well, anyway, speaking of Frozen. So Coronation Day comes. And Elsa, just as she fears, loses her cool when Anna is like, hey, I just met this guy, Hans, and we're going to get married. And Elsa's like, what the fuck? And then she accidentally reveals her ice powers, causing the visiting dignitaries to revile her as a monster. And so she just runs away, which is, you know, sometimes a great move. She just gets in her white Bronco and goes. And then in obviously the film's most iconic sequence, the song Let It Go, she builds an ice castle, an ice dress, a cool ice hairdo. She turns into a glorious drag queen. Yes! And just says, fuck it all.
Yes. The only better drag moment with a cis woman in film is in Frozen 2.
What is that?
She has like a costume change in front of you when she realizes that she was the voice that she'd been waiting for.
Hmm.
It's incredible. It really is. And it's in an ice vagina.
Well, there you go.
There was at least one vagina door moment in this movie.
There are so many vagina doors in Frozen. Okay. And I love all of them.
When you think about it, every vagina is a door.
I just love that she's like, I am now alone in an ice castle. I will be in a gown and heels because I'm still fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's like Betty Davis or something. I like that Elsa is basically like, what if Carrie didn't end tragically?
Ooh.
For a second, I thought you meant Carrie Bradshaw. And I was like, yes, good point.
What if Stephen King's Carrie did not end tragically and she got to thrive?
Yeah, right.
What is Carrie's mom yelling at her but conceal don't feel the entire time?
Oh my God. Oh, yeah. And I never thought of it, but it's such a parallel to Carrie. And for people who don't know, you must not be gay, but Carrie is telekinetic, Stephen King's Carrie White, and she is invited by the popular boy to prom. She goes, her mother is a terrifying fundamentalist. And then at the prom, a cruel prank is played on her where famously the popular kids, led by Nancy Allen, who's 30 years old, dump pig's blood on her. John Travolta also there. This movie was so cheaply made by Brian De Palma that there's a scene where Carrie flips Nancy Allen and John Travolta's car and they just took a still image and rotated it a bunch of times.
I love that.
They're just like, not bothering with that.
We're not going to build a cardboard car. We're going to build a pinwheel and put a photo on it.
And then to quote, I believe, Amber Benson in Bravo's 100 Scariest Movie Moments, Carrie let the bitches have it.
Mm-hmm.
And she just uses her telekinesis to kill everyone. And in the book, it is a very long, drawn out description of how she like she destroys the town. Like Stephen King loves getting into the like grotty bits of like how do gas stations work and how would you blow one up and how would the fire spread to neighboring cars? And he wrote, I think, in On Writing about feeling a bit weird about the legacy of that book, to say nothing of Rage, which is literally about a school shooting, and school shootings, which, you know, have simply become part of American life. But you can recognize an archetype without inventing it. And I think Stephen King was writing from his own adolescence when he made Carrie, which is why she's probably possibly his only female character who feels real and isn't reminiscent of his wife, because mm-hmm. she's reminiscent of him.
Right.
Like Elsa?
Yeah, totally. Right? Because we have like a power that you have that you're shunned for having. There's like, obviously, there's not like really a religious element explicitly in this movie, but like the fear of power possessed by women is one of the major undercurrents of American Christianity, American style.
Yeah.
And so rather than going berserk in a blow up the town way, she just flees and like goes on a real home improvement bender.
I mean, right. She self-isolates because she's like, I'm dangerous to you.
Yeah.
Right. And she's just so magical inside that she can't contain it.
I just to keep our constant Frozen 2 joke going, mm-hmm. I was just like, you know, there's a lot of pagan imagery in this movie. I guess that's as close as it gets to being religious. So I just looked up Frozen Pagan on Google and it's like all of the articles are paganism, goddesses, spirituality, and Elsa in Disney's Frozen 2. The hidden pagan lore of Disney's Frozen 2.
Wow, Frozen 2 really does cover everything.
It's really coming at us from all angles.
And so Elsa flees. Anna, who the cold does bother her anyway, jumps on a steed and heads off into the snow to try and find her sister. She ends up at Traveling Oaken's General Store and Sauna, I believe, which is delightful. And that is where she meets Kristoff, who is the John Krasinski of this movie. Aww. I feel like he is actually modeled physically after John Krasinski.
I love that. Can I also say that many people have said that this is like the first moment that you actually see a representation of a gay family in Disney.
Oh, really?
The proprietor of the store mm-hmm. says, hello, family. And you don't know if he's talking to like his own family or just to a family. But the theory is that it's his husband and two kids who then wave back and go, nice.
Oh, okay. Which is lovely. And also that shot lasts 1/3 of a second.
They're like, we did it.
Because everyone has to be a Talmudic scholar to find queer stuff in Disney films.
And to be clear, you can absolutely justify that he's just saying hi to another family.
But that is the more tortured analysis of it, which historically has been the gay one. So that's exciting.
Yes.
Well, and now, I mean, it's like the reality of doing that doesn't necessarily happen in sort of like large entertainment. Now it can, you can be a brand and advertise your gay imagery to the gays, and you can advertise your like conservative imagery to the conservatives. Like,
yeah.
To the conservies. It's a, you know, you can like now sort of completely architect these silos that I guess that's why like these movies that end up getting seen by everybody become like the last remaining quasi monocultural text for people to go like, why wasn't I in there? Or if I was in there, why was I treated that way? Or why wasn't this thing like,
yeah,
that's why we're doing that with, you know, Barbie, less so Oppenheimer, although probably could have used it.
Why can't I find myself in Oppenheimer?
I think there, you know, there was some question about like, why didn't we see very particular affected populations in Oppenheimer? Mm. But it was like less people were going to Oppenheimer for a good time. So it was less discoursey.
Yeah. And I guess that is more of a history question, right? Because we are still stuck with the stories viewed as marketable, still primarily being white man have feelings. I haven't seen Oppenheimer. I bet I would probably even like it, but I, you know, am free to slag it because let's be honest, I'm not going to bother getting around to it.
I'm over the halfway point in my projected lifespan. I can't do 3 hours with that guy.
Yeah. You know who you can do 3 hours with? Maybe Marty. He'll make it a joy.
I'll give Marty all of my time, all of my remaining years.
That's generous.
If he's able to keep going like this, I can give him 3 hours.
Come on, just look at him.
Look at those eyebrows. Love him.
They do so much work.
Aw. Okay. So Anna meets Kristoff, who's the grown-up little boy Iceman we saw at the start of the movie. That was a weird way to explain it. He works in the ice industry. So it's a bad day for him because Elsa, it turns out, when she built her giant, when she built that castle, accidentally generated so much cold and ice energy that she has plunged Arendelle into winter. It was like May or something before. Which is interesting to me because it directly contradicts the stated moral of Let It Go, right? Which is such a big hit and which toddlers love and grownups love and which I love singing and we all love singing because it's about women and fear and we need to lean in and let it go and just like be ourselves and wish upon a star or whatever. And it's like, I believe all that stuff. I believe in believing in yourself. I'm an American. But then we learn that Elsa is incorrect and that she's fucked everything up. So it's just funny to me. I'm not saying that it's a plot hole or that like the movie has some kind of subversive actual moral. I'm just like, that's weird.
I think that the movie is about how you need a little bit of fear, which I'm excited to talk to you about. Because Anna, at least 3 times in this movie, Anna jumps off of very high things without looking. Mm. And it like doesn't go well for her. She's constantly doing really risky things without thinking about it. And so I think that this movie is like 90% love, 10% fear, everyone.
I love that. Right. Yeah. And about how, you know, you can let it go, but you can't do it because you live alone in a nice castle that you built by yourself where you're never going to see anyone and you're going to build a snow monster to defend you. And so, yeah, Anna's looking for her sister. She meets up with Kristoff, who has a reindeer named Sven, who is a pretty great character. He's just basically, he's a dog. He's a dog with a reindeer costume on.
And I pose this question to you, Sarah.
Uh-huh.
We are led to believe, potentially, that he has a relationship with a reindeer, specifically by way of a line mm-hmm. that the trolls give later, which is it his thing with the reindeer that's a little outside of nature's laws?
Mm. Yeah.
And I was like, why did we do that? Like,
I don't know.
Because I think the Lopez songwriters want things for adults. Mm.
It was for me, for sure.
Right. Because there's also like, why have a ballroom with no balls?
That was great.
God, I didn't even think about that.
Like, I just think that there are dirty jokes in here and that the Lopez's absolutely do it on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was really taken by that line about him and this reindeer.
Disney, I think, has always had, or at least since the 90s, has thrown in little jokes for adults, which is
for sure
sweet of them and also increases the rewatchability of their product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, well, I guess, Alex, do you think that maybe this is just what the trolls are saying and it doesn't imply an actual relationship? That's my hope.
I mean, I think it works when you read between the lines and it's funny to think that maybe there have been some lonely nights with the reindeer. But also just on the level of like, he seems to be a person who can only have a relationship with an animal, even if it's just totally cool. There's some questions to be asked, but aren't we all?
They do share carrots.
A wet carrot. That carrot is wet with that animal saliva.
With the reindeer's saliva.
Well, white people love to make out with their dogs.
Yeah. So if I was a rock troll, I'd be like, that's outside of nature's laws. And he like often shares his deepest feelings like through a puppet at family therapy, but through the reindeer. Like, I think that there are non-X-rated ways to read that line.
Sure.
And, you know, and if you take it the X-rated way, then like it's all OK because Kristoff is a bottom.
That's the only way that it's OK, though, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Animals need consent.
Oh, yeah. No, that's why I respect that guy in Seattle who died being penetrated by a horse.
I did not know that.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
So, you know, don't do it. If you're going to commit bestiality, the only ethical way is to die while doing it. So that's my advice.
This also covered in Frozen 2.
Best running joke we've ever had in a show.
Okay, so what happens? So Anna meets Kristoff. It's a classic action rom-com meet cute where they're fighting. He's like, what are you? You must have bad judgment. You agreed to marry a guy you just met. They run away from some wolves. They have a dramatic jump across a crevasse. He loses his sled. And so, in like classic romance novel fashion, my favorite kind, they're like stuck together because she promised him a new sled after she destroyed his last one, and he has to help her. And what's there to do but for them to bicker and fall in love? It's like Romancing the Stone.
Yes.
It's exactly like Romancing the Stone.
It is exactly it.
Or the new one, The Lost City.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. This is a classic formula.
Yeah.
And I love it.
And we love it.
I love it every time.
And why do we love it?
Well, because it means that he's a good person, right? Because it's just an excuse. He's not doing it for the sled, right? He has Sven say to him, but she'll die if she goes alone, right?
Yeah.
Like some part of his psyche is just doing this because he's a good person.
And I what I do appreciate about this, there are some things I appreciate about this movie. There's some criticisms I have about sort of what it does versus what I think it's doing. But I think that like the conversation around this movie when it came out is that it's like, it's a love story, but it ends up being a love story between sisters. That's a great thing. It's the guy turns out to be bad, whatever. But the thing about her relationship, in which we see in the relationship in Romancing the Stone, which is the relationship we see in Speed, which is the relationship we see, is like
leap year.
Oh my God. Another favorite.
And we are in a leap year. Perfect timing.
Wow.
Is sometimes the relationship isn't a forever thing. It's just a like the adventure you go on with a person for now.
Except that in Frozen 2. But it turns out they're really good at charades together.
That's cool.
Aww. Yeah.
They have another thing.
They have another thing.
They have two things. That's great.
It's not like Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves where they only have their shared trauma.
Well, as a student of the romance novel, I have always found it interesting that like there are certain tropes within romance novels. I'm sure there's been a lot in the past 15. I mean, I know there's been a lot in the past 15 years that I've completely missed, but that, you know, in the 70s, there was a lot more of like, you know, actual non-consensual stuff in romance and a lot more forced marriage that involved, you know, sexual violence and that being outright a part of it. And then I feel like in the 90s, we had a transition to more of the Romancing the Stone model, where you're basically a man and a woman thrust together by circumstance in a way that counter to the historical period they're in, whether, you know, in the past or right now, because it's, you know, the same problem, like kind of renders them equals and able to fall in love on equal footing. I mean, Vanessa, does that seem true to you?
Yeah. And I think now, you know, the trope is called Stuck Together, right? And the contemporary Stuck Together books that I'm thinking of are like, there's a great one called Rosalind Palmer Takes the Cake that takes place like on a Great British Bake Off set.
Oh my God. That sounds amazing.
It's amazing. And so like now it's, you're stuck together with a little bit of consent and you get this enemies to lovers, you know, stuck together overlap. But yeah, and I think that with Frozen and Romancing the Stone, there's also this feeling, and this gets made fun of in Lost City, that like someone is just like, I'm not going to leave until the bad part is over, right? Like Kristoff is just in, and then Olaf is just in. And this is a big scary thing that she's doing. And so somebody being like, I'll give you a ride. And then it turns out they're not going to just give you a ride, but they're also going to buy you dinner. And they're also going to make sure you have a new pair of shoes, right? Like, it's Les Mis. It's like, we love this like generosity that I think we see in this.
Yeah.
I'm going to provide for you in all of the ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And that, you know, and that you get an experience where you get to actually get to know each other, which I think famously a lot of the subtext and how we talk about modern dating is that it's very hard to do that. And so, okay. So Anna and Kristoff go to the ice castle to confront Elsa, who does not want to talk to them and sends them away with the help of her ice monster. And she also wounds Anna in the heart, which is worse than in the brain, which is what happened before. And they also meet Olaf, their childhood snowman, who's like the cute little guy obligatorily in this movie. And I feel like people at this point have had maybe too much Olaf. I really like him. I have gotten tired of Olaf.
He has a great song in Frozen 2. Sorry.
Alex, how do you feel about Olaf and, you know, the sort of central dilemma of his existence?
I love Olaf. And I also just like, I love that Olaf exists because Book of Mormon exists.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is a very funny spinoff. It's not a spinoff, but it's like, it's a very funny path to success in the world of Disney. But I love, I love Olaf. I just love the conceit of a character who is so wildly optimistic with so little information. And that's part of why they can be wildly optimistic. Mm-hmm. It's great. I think he's very line for line. I think it's hilarious.
He's so funny. He's so funny when he gets so excited about his nose and he thinks both Kristoff and Sven are called Sven. Like so many good bits. They're just a million bits. In Frozen 2, he acts out all of Frozen 1.
I love that part.
And it's incredible. This is a Frozen 2 episode, right?
It's, you know, it's about the Frozen saga. And speaking of just the multiverse we're all in, when we did our Dyatlov Pass episode of You're Wrong About, one of the things that came up is that some of the scientists who kind of used new technology to map out forensically what could have happened to the Dyatlov Pass expedition used some of the snow technology created for the making of Frozen to do it.
Fascinating.
That's amazing.
Okay, so now we have an ice wound to the heart. Olaf is here. He is a snowman who dreams of experiencing the intense heat of summer. He just knows it's going to go great for him. So Kristoff takes Anna to the rock trolls, who it turns out, you know, raised him. Grandpa Rock Troll diagnoses the patient and he's like, she's been wounded in the heart. She's going to turn to a block of ice unless she gets true love's kiss. And they're like, oh shit, we got to get her back to Hans, who in the interim of both sisters being away doing God knows what, has handily seized control of Arendelle, like you do when you get engaged to someone within 45 minutes of meeting them. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, the first time I saw this movie, when this twist happened, it blew my fucking mind. Like, I like to think that I'm so clever about twists, but I'm really not. I just watch a lot of really bad movies, so it makes me feel like I can see things coming. But the twist in both this and Coco, I was like, Jesus Christ. And basically it's that they bring Anna to her newly beloved Hans and he's going to give her true love's kiss. And he's like, oh, Anna, if only there was someone out there who loved you. And you're like, what?
It was brutal. That line and do you want to build a snowman? Okay, bye. They destroy me. Like this poor girl who just wants anything.
What do you guys make of the fact that it is an act of true love that will unfreeze her heart? And in this exact scene where we find out that, quote unquote, no one loves Anna, Olaf is there literally sitting in front of a fire melting for her. Aww. And he says some people are worth melting for, right? Like he's willing to die for her. Why doesn't that save her? Does it have to be humans and like not something magically created?
Don't they cover this in Frozen 2?
They will in Frozen 3.
I'd never thought about that. But I mean, I assume that Olaf is just a spell.
Right.
Like, I assume that Olaf doesn't have...
Doesn't love.
Sentience that counts.
That's so unfair. It really upsets my kids.
Olaf is like an AI-generated character.
I will say, the kids get pretty quiet throughout the movie. But at this point, they're like, that's an act of true love!
That's a great question. It's a question I did not consider.
You got to watch it twice in a row.
That's, yeah, evidently. I know. Well, I do like that it opens, like, the whole point, I guess, is that, like, it opens up a conversation for kids to be like, love is not, in fact, represented by the mechanics of courtship. Like, love is represented by action.
Yeah.
And sort of how we turn feelings and not capital C commitment, but commitments into action. Yeah. And I like that we're doing that.
Totally. What I think I love about this moment and like the heartbreak of, oh, Anna, if only anyone loved you, is just the way that it like confirms this story that she's been telling, right? It's not only the worst thing that any of us could hear. It's a story that she's been telling herself about how her sister doesn't love her, right? And how there's just such aloneness in it for her specifically. She thought that this guy was her way out and his 12 brothers.
Yeah.
And it turns out that, she's still totally alone.
Yeah. And in a very basic way, one of the messages of this movie is guys aren't your way out of feeling alone. Girls are your way out of feeling alone. And I think that's very positive.
I just read, because Carolyn had read and loved it, I just read Rilke's Letters to a Young Poet, which I'd never read before. You know, where you were asking earlier, Sarah, is like, where's the place that you can go in between these two realities? And his recommendation is to go inside of yourself for a long time until you actually, not to do the Elsa version, but to find a self outside of other contexts so that you can become, so that when you do show up to a thing, you show up as a whole person. And, you know, poor Anna doesn't realize that that is an option. To everyone's point so far, mechanically, it makes sense to like do a thing that sort of like gets her out of this reality. But yeah, this, I do agree that the answer here is that like guys are not the way out, but to look around and think about like what your relationship is to all of these feelings, what your relationship is to all of this longing, what your relationship is to all of this heartbreak, and then figuring out where to go from there.
Yeah. And I feel like that connects to, you know, Hans is the escape option and the true love of, you know, your sister or your family is the community option and the sort of growing where you are option.
Oh, can I read a quote that I sent to Sam Sanders based on our conversation the other day?
Yeah, about my best friend's wedding.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Nice.
So Sam was making the point, and I think there are a lot of reasons for this. We talk about this in the show, but Sam was making the point that this is like, it was capitalism all along thing, really, that the way that marriage has become and the way that our society like centers the romantic pairing over sort of all other kinds of love, make it so that we don't make as much time for friends anymore. Mm-hmm. We don't sort of, it's not whatever. And I think that that's right. And yeah. I came upon this bell hooks quote from The Beloved Community, a conversation between bell hooks and George Rossi. And she says, I think that part of what a culture of domination has done to raise that romantic relationship up as the single most important bond, when of course the single most important bond is that of a community. Mm-hmm. Marriage many years ago was really a communal act. When I think about what I wrote about my parents and belonging, I recognize that part of what kept them committed for 60 years was the fact that their marriage was part of a community life. It was not something that was separate from their community life. We have to be aware the extent to which liberal individualism has actually been an assault on community. The notion that, quote, real freedom is about not being interdependent, when the genuine staff of life is our interdependency, is our capacity to feel both with and for ourselves and other people. I wonder if Belle liked Frozen.
I don't want to skip us ahead, but like, so what do you guys make of the ending and the fact that it's self-sacrifice, right?
Well, Vanessa, why don't you take us home? What happens after our Hans twist? I don't trust myself.
So what happens is that Kristoff realizes that he loves Anna and comes back, as we find out that Hans doesn't actually love Anna. Hans claims Anna is dead without actually killing her, in a very typical baddie thing. And so Anna is going to die, but she's like out on the frozen fjord trying to get to Kristoff so that she can have a true love's kiss and survive. But then she sees that Hans is about to behead Elsa. So instead of going and trying to save herself and walk toward this true love's kiss, she turns back toward her sister, who is like kind of a bad guy to Anna in this moment, right? Like, Elsa is not a great sister throughout this movie. Mm-hmm. And Anna goes and like stops Hans from beheading Elsa. And because she does that, she doesn't get her true love's kiss. So she freezes. But then it turns out that her act of true love, of being willing to sacrifice herself for Elsa, is able to unfreeze her heart. So she can unfreeze her own heart.
See, that's so interesting, because I've always read it as Elsa unfreezing her heart, because Elsa has true love for her.
Oh. Either way, it's like Anna's choice.
Yeah.
That, right. Yes. Like Elsa finally feels true love, and therefore, is that what you, how do you see it?
My read of it is that it's like Disney being like, ha 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 ha, we're Disney. So you thought it was going to be a heteronormative true love kiss, but they were confused because that's what they thought too. But really, it's a true love's kiss from your sister. That's how, I'm not saying that that's correct, but that's always been how I see it. Alex, what do you think?
I thought the same.
Majority wins.
I thought the same. And I think that like the self-sacrifice thing is sort of like a lead up to how we get to this place. But I thought that it was like, exactly, like it is not the true love's kiss we've sold you for 50 years. Mm-hmm. It is true love, familial love, aided by self-sacrifice. Elsa realizes somehow, and I'm just going from here on, I'm going on Wikipedia. Elsa, realizes that love is what sort of is able to like unfreeze her heart, because she has essentially been taught an ideology of confinement and self-seclusion. And that's what helps save the day. But I apparently this is still muddy for me.
Well, and then it ends with Kristoff getting a sled with cup holders and Elsa being able to use her magical powers in a controlled way because she's loved now. So she can allow for ice skating in June, but it can just be like a fun thing. It doesn't freeze the whole world.
To your point, Vanessa, a person who I imagine has seen this movie at least 100 times more than Sarah and me.
Yes.
This is the second to last paragraph in our friend Wikipedia.org. Anna sacrifices her chance to be seen. Anna sacrifices her. You know how I do reading out loud.
1,000 little girls just fell down dead.
Anna sacrifices her chance to be saved by Kristoff and steps between Elsa and Hans. She finally completely freezes solid, which devastates Elsa. As she hugs her sister, Anna slowly thaws. Her heroism constitutes a, quote, act of true love for her sister.
Okay, Elsa's heroism. The use of her there is less than ideal.
Yeah. Elsa's heroism in hugging a block of ice?
That's it.
Yeah, good point. I feel like it's mutual heroism, right? Because then it's the sisters truly love each other and are able to express it finally for the first time in this movie.
It's the first time they act like sisters since...
For the first time in forever.
The great freezing of however many years back.
It's just Anna has been trying to love Elsa, right? Yeah. She's like on the other side of this door. And she doesn't know that on the other side of the door, Elsa is like in a snowstorm of her own making.
Yeah, it is true. It's like only once she realizes like how much she can lose and apparently has lost does she allow herself to feel that much, you know? And I think one of the things I love most about this movie is, I mean, something that it's maybe easy to forget is that it's also beautiful. It's gorgeous to look at. The songs are great.
Yeah.
There's kind of something for everyone plot-wise, I would say, at least demographically. But also that it is this big, bombastic movie about feelings. Mm-hmm. And that feels very important.
And about our ability or willingness to access them.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's the tragedy of this movie is twofold. It's Anna is not able to have a relationship with her sister for the reasons that we understand. And Elsa basically has to make up for 15 to 20 years of diverted feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And realizes everything that she's lost. And I guess she's realizing in this moment that love is worth the risk. And if you sort of spend your entire time shutting yourself off to any potential feeling, yes, you're not going to accidentally freeze your sister to death. Nice bonus. But actually, like maybe the best way to go about that is to actually mitigate and form a relationship with whatever those fiery feelings are so that you don't forever shut yourself off to love.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you're, I think the reason that my gay stepdaughter loves this is because I think she was scared to come out, even though she came out really young, that, you know, people would reject her. And so, you know, she kept it a secret for a while and felt isolated in that. And society tells her to like conceal that and work toward a heterosexual life. And then to find out that when she stepped out, that people, you know, are actually see that as neutral at worst, but actually is magical, right? That's the dream that you want every kid to do, regardless of queerness, like whether it's like, I secretly want to be, you know, an improviser or, you know, whatever it is.
Parents are like, I don't care if you're gay. I don't care if you're into improv comedy. I'll still love you.
Yeah. I only care if you're Alex Keaton and I'm a Republican. But like, right? Like, that's what we want, is to like reveal the thing inside of us that we're scared the world is going to hate and be afraid of. And it turns out that it's a gift.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and especially in you know, and Disney makes movies for the entire world, which is part of why their gay stuff happens so quickly, because they don't want to piss off China. But that, especially in a culture that today is, you know, certainly not in many pockets, but as a country across the board, we still treat any kind of queer identity as something that, you know, we are communicating loud and clear to so many people, makes them not just unlovable, but unhuman.
Yeah. And a potential target.
Yeah.
In many, many ways.
Yeah. And I mean, and so it feels like, you know, we need these big totemic stories to, you know, map our own allegories onto.
Yeah.
Vanessa, what are your thoughts as someone who has kind of, you know, had a frozen era the past decade? How's it been?
I mean, I like you, Sarah, I'm a scholar of romance novels. And I do think we are in a moment of romance novels where a lot of the love is about community. Mm. Like, usually someone is also making friends or really relying on their friends or, right. And to both of your points, right, at the end of a Shakespeare romance, you wouldn't just have one couple get married. You would have all the couples get married, right? Like, the more people in love, the better.
And someone swear revenge, possibly.
Probably. But I think that Frozen is just like about an abundance of love, right? Like, Olaf gets his happy ending because Elsa charms his own flurries and he gets to enjoy summer. And Kristoff and Anna are in love, and Elsa and Anna are in love. Like, it's just like all the love.
And they're all skating together.
Yes. Whereas like in Snow White, right? It's just like you're happy because the prince and Snow White get together. This is that community thing.
It's like, goodbye, dwarfs.
Right.
Thanks for taking care of the lass.
Yeah, I think that is part of why we love it. I also just think the songs are fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they get stuck in your head, you know, and they're beltable and they fit so many different moods. And yeah, I feel like you know, and I haven't seen this movie that many times, but I've certainly seen bits of it with small children a lot as well. And it's a nice world to be immersed in. There's so much children's media, and I think Disney has always benefited from this. So much children's media is made based on the theory that kids are dumb and they won't notice if you make them something that looks really crappy and maybe even has kind of a sinister aura about it. And like, I love being in Arendelle and I love being just watching these snow effects. It's like watching planet Earth.
Yes. And the other thing that, you know, I know we mentioned this earlier, but I mean, I'm curious what you guys think. What do you think this movie thinks about fear?
I think it's, yeah, I think fear for sure. But like, I think at the end of the day, it's talking about like pause and introspection. Mm-hmm. I think fear ideally is a thing that like gets us to consider that. But like Anna's issue, we've been touching on this throughout. Anna's issue is not necessarily fear or the lack of it. She's trying to rush out of a situation and she only knows situations. So like she's trying to rush out of a situation into the next thing, be it the like literal leaping, be it the meet the guy that day and sort of get out, rather than go like, okay, like what is going on with me and what does the situation require? And again, I don't know that it's necessarily a lesson about fear as much as it's a lesson about like, rather than going to the next thing you feel impulsively driven toward, maybe ask what you're trying to get to before you get there.
Yeah.
How does that sound? What is your take on it? Because you've brought fear up several times. That sounds important to you.
Well, I'm just, you know, because I mean, that's what breaks Elsa down, right? Is she's so scared. She's just so scared that she's going to hurt her sister. But maybe I really like your point. Maybe it's not about fear. And with Anna, she doesn't actually try to understand Elsa, right? When she sets off to like go find Elsa, somebody's like, what's your strategy? And she goes, I'm going to talk to my sister. And like, that's it. And then she goes and is like, you know, my favorite song is the reprise of For the First Time in Forever, their big fight.
Oh, I love it.
In the ice castle. They are like singing past each other, right? Anna's not like, what's going on with you,
right?
She's saying like, why didn't you tell me? You can unfreeze it. Maybe it's like Ted Lasso and it's about toxic positivity. But like, Anna isn't asking questions, right? Like, she's bad at loving her sister.
Well, to be fair though, if you are Anna, one day your sister disappears.
Oh, totally.
Withdraws within herself, and you have no data And all that you can do with the data is be like, what the fuck is wrong with me?
Totally.
And that's how resonant is that? How much time have we all spent because for whatever reason, there's a communication impasse or an inability for whatever reason to feel vulnerable enough or trustworthy enough to give that information. And our rational selves should go, I get that they've been in a place and they can't do the thing. But instead, we're like, what the fuck did I do?
Right. Mm-hmm. I think the saddest line of the movie is actually in Do You Want to Build a Snowman? After the parents have died, Anna knocks on the door and says, please, I know you're in there. And it's just like... Like, who hasn't felt like that? Like, please meet me here. Meet me in my pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who are her friends?
The portraits.
The portraits. Yeah. Oh, I love the scene where she's jumping and sort of miming the portrait.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. And she says, hang in there, Joan.
And that's like a moment where there's so much personality, you know, where it feels like, right? Like this movie feels... incredibly as if it was made by human hands.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, these are lived in humans who made this movie.
I also want to note that at the very end of the credits, they list the production babies, which despite this being Disney, we have to assume are not babies who worked on the movie, but babies who were born to people who worked on the movie while they were making it.
So I have only really read the Wikipedia article, but Disney was essentially working on an adaptation of the Snow Queen since the 30s.
So no wonder it's so thought out.
Yes.
Good ideas take time.
And then eventually someone was just like, you guys, it's coming out in 2011. And they were like, okay. And just like wrote it. Huh. And it was the first Disney film to be directed by a woman. I mean, it was co-directed. It was also directed by a man. But
you know, famously, you can't have a woman on a fishing boat or it'll sink. So it's nice of Disney to disregard that superstition.
As everyone who's been listening to the show for the past handful of episodes knows, I've really been deep in Gossip Girl revisit. And it was very fun listening to Gossip Girl voice Elsa this entire time.
XOXO, Anna.
Some people say...
Looks like Arendelle's own ice queen has taken to the wilderness.
You know you love me. Oh my God. I really liked, I think it was like very, very beneficial for me as a person who had just like young people in his life when this movie came out. I watched it all and appreciate it, but also watched it all in the context of watching it because it was a cultural phenomenon. And it was like very nice to revisit out of that context and like just as a text on its own and full of songs that I certainly recognize but don't hear 2 to 3 times a day these days.
Yeah.
And so it was a fantastic revisit.
The female director on this film, apparently people would come up to her for a long time and tell her that their kids are obsessed with Frozen and she would say thank you, and then eventually she started saying I'm sorry. I think she can go back to thank you, right? Yeah. 11 years.
Well, and what is the life cycle of a Disney movie?
That's a great question.
Because I think if everything goes well, it's like it's a huge success and then it becomes a meme and then we have to make fun of it and then we grudgingly accept it as part of culture and it just stays.
I think the thing that might have harmed this, and I just don't know because I wasn't, again, I wasn't in proximity to young people by the time Frozen 2 came out, is... Frozen 2, right, was like an actual release. It wasn't like when they would release like Pocahontas 2 on VHS.
No, it's a real movie. They're doing real sequels now, not like in the 90s when they would, as Family Guy joked, do Aladdin 1.5, Jafar might need glasses.
So as a result, I imagine the Frozen 2 like mainstream revival brought all of these songs back into households. So it probably had like a big long stretch. But I think like, I think because, and I don't know that this is true, but like when we were kids, or at least when, I'm not going to guess people's ages, but when we were kids, like
I'm 41.
Yeah. So when we were kids, a Disney movie would come out and then 2 years later, a Disney movie would come out. And so it had a 2 year cycle. And now because of Disney and Pixar, there's not that wide of a gap for something to get killed.
Right. I also find it to be like a fascinatingly bad call of business history that Disney previously, and I believe that this was a Michael Eisner belief didn't have its movies out on VHS.
They would go in the vault.
Right. And because they believed that that would like dilute the brand or whatever. And so they would periodically re-release them in theaters, but you couldn't see them at home, which is absolutely psycho by today's standards, where obviously the goal is to keep the home video watcher watching as many streaming hours of anything as you can possibly cram into them. And we're all just these foie gras people.
Yeah, pretty soon it'll live in your AI glasses.
And then our brains will be harvested and eaten on toast.
I mean, there was that quote from some executive at Netflix, I think, that like our competition isn't other streaming platforms, it's sleep. And I was like, that's ominous.
It's so dark.
Doesn't that just feel like the Matrix? Don't you feel like at this point the American viewer is just like plugged into, you know, just in the goo bath with the outlets in the brain?
I am.
Well, it comes to, I mean, this question's always revitalized with any advent in digital media, but a new iteration of OpenAI came out yesterday, a video iteration.
Aye.
That you can essentially, through a prompt, create 1-minute videos just like out of the ether. It could be like the examples were like scenes of Gold Rush from above, like whatever, and it looks incredible. And so the question, you know, the things that all of the AI cheerleaders were talking about yesterday, which is like, you know, it used to be sort of you watch video and then you watch video on Netflix. And now in like a couple of years, just through a prompt, you can watch a whole movie. And one, I believe that there is a reality where that sticks a little with substantial parts of the population. But B, it makes me ask this question we've always been asking every time there's some tech innovation, which is like, what are we trying to get out of the media we consume? Mm-hmm. Is it just entertaining us for the point of distraction or to find resonances that are actually important to understanding our human experience?
Mm-hmm. It's because we all are told to conceal and not feel. And so this, we can entertain ourselves rather than feel things. I mean, that's why I do it.
Dissociate, don't associate.
Yeah, I don't mind being alone because I have you two in my ears and I have audiobooks and I have, right? Like, I'm never alone because I'm always plugged in.
Sure.
And now at 41, I feel like I'm finally craving some quiet and reflection time. But it took me until this age to sort of be comfortable with my own thoughts.
Yeah.
I like to think that as a culture, we're approaching a quiet horizon.
I mean, there are people really advocating for it, right? Like Jenny Odell. Mm-hmm. And I do think so, too.
Well, I do think also, like, as this stuff, I'm a little more, I'm not a doomer on at least this media taking over specifically, because like we saw this, we truly saw the same conversation about when photography came on the scene. Mm. Same exact conversation.
Also, the printing press. People are going to be able to read it by themselves. We burnt people at the stake over it.
I do find that there is always, no matter what happens and no matter how flashy the thing is or no matter how doom invoking it is, like there is always among some significant population, if not everybody who just don't get it delivered to them, there is always an appetite for something that resonates within something inside of them, mm-hmm. that isn't just interesting because it's like flashy and it moves.
Right. The only reason that I think that this moment might be different is because of like all of the studies about depression rates amongst young people.
Sure.
Right. And so I'm with you. I'm like, the novel got invented and everybody was like, well, now brains are mush. You know, it's just like keeps happening. Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, can we stop? But I don't know. It is scary. Right?
Oh, yeah.
I haven't read Infinite Jest, but I think that's what it's about. And it is scary.
Yeah. I mean, God knows I haven't read it either. I'm waiting for the abridged version, Finite Jest. But
a little bit of jest.
A soupçon of joking.
Ina Kleinic jest. But I do tend to think that humans just kind of are doing the same things on a cyclical, you know, the same trends just recur cyclically. But I do think that like the level of technology we have is beyond anything our brains can cope with. Like, I think photographs are like right on the bubble. Pencils, sure. We probably have the right DNA to cope with having pencils. But this, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this might be just where we're like, they can, it's yours.
Machines, it's yours.
Yeah. You guys take it.
They can just watch the movies themselves. And the future of AI we were taught to expect in the 80s was really much more along the lines of Johnny Five. Where's Johnny Five?
Subservient and heavy. So I am curious to know, Elsa and Anna have a father who is lost at sea. Who, in your view, Vanessa, is the daddy of Frozen?
Olaf.
Great.
Nice.
He just wants warm hugs. And he's like there to melt for you.
He'll melt for you.
He'll stop the world and melt with you.
Exactly.
I am going to pick. We had such an expansive plot that we there were some little fun moments that were missed. And one of my favorite fun moments is the shopkeep. Mm-hmm. The shopkeep who eventually, when he is talked to negatively by Kristoff, removes him. Mm-hmm. And then, and I love this so much, I'd never caught this before, he comes and asks to be excused from his small act of violence. So he's going to give her a quart of lutefisk.
Oh, no.
To make things peaceful between them. And I thought that was such like a very funny and clever conversation. And it doesn't make him like the star of the movie, but I really enjoy that he's like, I had to use this necessary violence, mm-hmm. but let's not let that ruin the moment.
That really goes to the community theme.
You and I are connecting.
Yeah. It's also a nice end joke for Minnesota types.
Yes, it is. Sarah Marshall, what's your take?
My daddy is Marshmallow, the snow monster, because, you know, I just appreciate him. And he has a little moment of closure at the very end of this movie where he finds a little crown, puts it on. And I hope he's happy out there. And then he sings his songs.
He seems like I may be related to the Iron Giant.
Yeah.
Definitely like cousins, right? Yes. Second cousins.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Vanessa, where can people find you? What have you done lately that people might enjoy?
What have I done lately?
Account for your time.
My mom wants the same thing. I have a book called Praying with Jane Eyre that I did somewhat lately. And I mean, super lately, we're doing this rom-com podcast and doing a Northanger Abbey pilgrimage and a Wuthering Heights pilgrimage. So that's what I'm working on a lot lately. We're doing a Taylor Swift pilgrimage.
In Pennsylvania? Where?
No, we're just going to a remote place because folklore takes place in like a fictional, mystical place.
All right.
Oh, so we're going to Cape Cod.
A real,
truly
like,
a fictional mystical place.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Vanessa, thank you for building the communities that capitalism has stripped us of.
Yeah, that's super cool. Thanks for being here. I had a blast talking about this with y'all.
Bye, everybody. Watch out for my butt.
All right, that's it for this week's episode of You Are Good, a feelings podcast about movies. Thank you so much to Vanessa Zoltan for joining us and talking about Frozen. Thanks to Miranda Zickler for producing this episode, editing this episode, and producing our show. Thank you for production oversight to Carolyn Kendrick, of course. Thank you, of course, for listening to the episode and telling your friends about it and maybe reviewing it with a 5-star review, if that's the sort of thing that you are able to do. Thanks for supporting the show on Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions, where you get those bonus episodes. Thank you to Fresh Lesh for providing the beats that make our episodes sound so sweet. Thank you for finding us on social media at You Are Good or You Are Good Pod. And I think that's it for this week's episode of You Are Good. Let's, go out there. Get out there. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Get out there, you know, spread some kindness. Take care of yourselves and each other, as Jerry Springer used to say. Don't forget, until next time, that you, my friend, are good.